This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. To talk to Brian, Jeff, or Vic, dial 355-NFL1. That's 355-6351. Jaguars This Week is also sponsored by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and the Jacksonville Transportation Group. This is your exclusive home for the Jacksonville Jaguars. AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Welcome to Jaguars This Week. I'm Jeff Lagerman. Vic and Brian are on assignment. That would be personal family vacation time. We've got a great show tonight for you, though. We've got three guests in studio. Let's go ahead and welcome them all in. We've got Vice President and CFO Bill Prescott. Good evening, Bill.
Oh, thank you for having me, Jeff.
And we've got Defensive Coordinator Mel Tucker.
Jeff, how you doing, brother?
Good evening. And then also Defensive Line Coach Joe Cullen.
Great to be here, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for everybody for coming. But what we're going to do, we're going to start with Bill, and then we're going to kind of have a little defensive preview to the season after we spend a little bit of time with Bill here. And Bill, obviously there has been a big push over this past offseason with Team Teal, Tony Boselli, and Carl Cannon. How has that gone, and how has that impressed you? Because it certainly impressed me to the events that I've been in. And I got to say this, Tony Boselli has turned into one of the best speakers that I have heard.
He's turned into one of our best ticket salespeople, too, in terms of what he's doing. But it's really been a great effort. You know, credit to the mayor's office, for realizing about a year ago that with the number of blackouts that we had a situation here that needed to be corrected sooner than later. And Carl Cannon and Ed Burr getting together, selecting Tony to be the commissioner, really pushed off the Team Teal effort. And what I really say is what's given us is the opportunity to reconnect with our fan base, is what I've seen in terms of all the events that I've gone to, that, you know what, a year ago people weren't buying tickets because they didn't like our head coach, they didn't like our quarterback, they
didn't
had
like
a bad
Bill Prescott.
They didn't like the price of beer that Bill Prescott was serving in the stadium, all of those things. And now going out, I think that Tony, through his message, has gotten people to realize that, you know what, this franchise is more than the head coach, the quarterback, the price of concessions, that it really is important to the city. And now these people are saying, okay, I've got to put those things aside. I've got to support the franchise. And that's what we're seeing happen. You know, about 13,000 season tickets sold so far, the most we've ever sold in the history of the franchise.
Okay, well, most you've ever sold in the history of the franchise. You know, the question now becomes how far to go? Because, you know, here we are July 21st. Camp starts up July 29th, and now people are starting to get excited about their football schedule. Where do you need to get?
We've got right now about 5,400 season tickets that we really need to sell between now and that first preseason game. And that's a tall order.
Is that a blackout lift number?
Well, it's a combination. If we do that and are able to get about 5,000 group ticket sales on average for the game, that would get the blackout lifted. I'm not sure if we're going to get all the way there for all eight games by the 21st, but, you know, I'm hoping that we get at least the first four games, that we know that those are going to be televised.
Now, when you say season tickets and first four games, is this because there, some of those are packages, three-game packages, or something of that nature?
Right. A combination of group sales, which, you know, typically large companies in terms of what they're doing, and then we will come out with half packs, basically two packages each with five games in it, probably I think sometime in the beginning of August. So we're counting on that group sales and those to generate on average about 5,000 tickets per game.
Now, there was a lot of different, I guess you could say, options for purchasing tickets. I know that the plan that had expired, are there things that are still available to a potential buyer?
Well, we're really getting down to the end of it now. So there is a limited deferral in terms of your payments. So it really now has come down to it's really time to step up and buy those season tickets.
All right, let me ask you this. Historically, you've been here from the beginning. Historically, when you approach the mid part of July, it's been a bump in season ticket sales. With the historical average, is this something that is going to be reachable?
Well, give you an idea, last year we sold about 1,300 season tickets in this time frame, July and August. We've run so far about three times what we have historically done. So that would tell me if, as long as we keep on pace with where we're going, we should be able to make it. And you go back to 2002, we sold about 6,000 tickets in this time frame. So we've done more in in 2002 what we hope to be able to do now. So those things tell you it is doable. You know, obviously the concern is, have we pushed sales that would have happened in July and August earlier because of the Team Teal initiative? We're going to know, I think, by next week. If we don't begin to see the bump where we see season tickets going up over 500 a week, then maybe we have cannibalized some of those sales, moved them forward. But right now we're optimistic that we're going to see that bump next week.
And time is obviously going to tell. Now, we've covered a lot of ground. We've got about 2 minutes to go here with you. What type of incentives and game day, additional game day experience will season ticket holders get this year? You had mentioned to me something about the water in the club seats.
Yeah, one of the things that, well, not the club seats, really throughout the stadium, is one of the things that Winn-Dixie has renewed their sponsorship, and is one of the things they wanted to do was on game day to be able to, because no doubt we're in a warm climate, we have some hot games, we're going to be able to reduce the price of water. They're going to have Jaguars water in the stands. They're going to come out, it's going to be reduced price from what it was last year. And then also for hot days, we're going to have even a special promotion where the water price is even going to go lower.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on those things. Some things we're also still working on that we'll have ready for the first game, but they're still in the final stages of being planned.
I read an article that was in the Boston Globe's online thing, and you had a quote in there that said that, you know, our challenge now is to provide the customer with something that's going to be better than staying home and watching a game in high def. That really is a challenge, isn't it? For all sports.
All sports, but in particular the NFL, that's why the commissioner is really focused on that. And it is. Our biggest competition is HDTV. So we need to, not only ourselves what we need to do, but even I think the league is recognizing they got to remove some of those restrictions that they put on us on game day so that when you come to the stadium, you're getting something more than you can see on
when
TV.
When you say restrictions, how so?
Just in terms of, you know, the music that we can play in the stadium, when we can play it, we're limited to that. The PA announcer, in terms of how much he can incite the crowd to get into it, well, they're realizing those restrictions are making it so that people say, you know, we get questions all the time, why isn't the PA announcer more energized in terms of getting the crowd into it? Well, we got to get the crowd into it. It's got to be an exciting environment to say, you know what, that's why I need to be here in the stadium and not watching it at home.
Last question. Could the NFL learn from going to some minor league baseball games to see how to make that better in some fashion?
In some fashion, I think so. And I think also down the road, not so much this year, I think technology is going to be a big part of what we do to enhance the game day experience. You know, I always go back, and it's always interesting going to a NASCAR race that people can tune in and listen to the driver talking to the
picker. I think we ought to be able to listen in to Mel Tucker call signals, but in delay.
Well, that is something that I think that down the road we're going to need to do things like that to say, hey, here's the reason I want to be in the stadium.
We just got to be careful because there's a lot of foul language that goes on with the coaches over those headsets. All right, Bill, thank you for spending the time. And next week you're going to come back, right?
Yeah,
we're
going to
talk again first segment next week and talk about tickets and how that week has gone because this is going to be an indicator.
Yep, this is a crucial week.
All right, thank you, Bill. And we come back, we're going to have the defensive coordinator and the defensive line coach, I think, which is going to be probably the most scrutinized position in training camp this year. So Mel Tucker, Joe Cullen, coming right back after this on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, this portion of Jaguars This Week, brought to you by Best Buy. Visit your nearest Best Buy in Regency, the Avenues, River City Marketplace, Town Center, and Orange Park. Lobby?
Very nice read, Joe. And we're now going to jump into some football and stay on the defensive side of the ball. We've got the defensive coordinator, the defensive line coach, and that's obviously Mel Tucker and Joe Cullen. And you guys have had a little bit of time off before we kind of get into the X's and O's. Have you guys enjoyed the time off?
Oh, shoot. The time off has been, it was timely. Got a chance to spend some time with the family. We did a little Griswold trip there with the minivan.
Did you have the wood panels on the minivan?
We didn't have the wood panels, but we had a little container, deal on top of the minivan, and we drove, and we had a good time and spent a couple weeks on the road in a little bit. So it was fun.
Because you guys are going back, what, Monday?
Yeah, we come back Monday, and, you know, just like Coach Tucker said, you know, same thing. We broke around the 25th of June, and, you know, first thing I did, I had a couple lineman camps that I had to go work at that I've done over the years, and that's always fun and rewarding to do that. And then, just like Coach said, I visited family and, you know, took some time away, and then eager to get back now.
Yeah, because I don't know if people really understand what a grind it is. I mean, from a player standpoint, that's the only side that I know. But, I mean, I see what you guys as coaches do. From a player standpoint, it's a physical grind. From a coaching standpoint, give people an idea of how, you know, a typical day in training camp would work. Because, I mean, you're talking, what, 14, 15-hour days or more? Is that about right?
Yeah, when training camp starts, you pretty much you go into a cave for a few weeks. I mean, pretty much from 6:30 in the morning till probably 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, you're working. Whether you're in the meeting room, on the practice field, whatever, studying tape, you know, working with players, things like that. And then, you know, you take a little nap in the evening, and then you come back and get ready to go the next day. And that's how it is during training camp. And during the season, you know, it's pretty much, you know, you're pretty much 7 days a week, you know, for 6 months.
A little nap in the evening. I like the way you put that. Are either one of you guys, Joe, I mean, Joe, you're old school now. I've already gotten stories on you. You're old school. You don't sleep in the office or anything like Joe Gibbs, you know, kind of made famous.
No, I try not to. In fact, I'll be living only about 4 minutes away over, you know, right across the river. So probably I try to get home, even if it's at 1, 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then back at 5 a.m., still try to get home. But there has been nights where you physically have to stay in the office over the years. You know, I remember as a player, you know, going through training camp. And then, you know, I was hired right out of college by my college head coach, Jim Reed, at the University of Massachusetts. And after the first week of camp, you know, just to reiterate on what Coach Tucker said, I said, I thought it was hard as a player. Holy cow, you didn't have any time, you know, during that. As Coach said, you go into a cave, it literally, to even get a workout is a maybe 15 minutes you could steal, because we're watching the tape in between practices. We're grading the tape for the players. So it's a grind.
And obviously the defensive side of the ball, it's like Christmas this year. I mean, you got all these draft picks, you know. I mean, you got the first rounder, you got the third rounder, you got the fourth rounder, you got the other fourth rounder. It's got to be exciting as a defensive coordinator to get this influx of not only young new blood, but also some accomplished veterans like Morrison and Campman.
Yeah, it is exciting when you see these young guys come in. They're eager. They're very, very coachable. They're willing. They're not jaded by, you know, the NFL and years of the NFL. All they want to do is play football. They're playing for the passion of the game, the love of the sport, and they take coaching well. And when they come in, they're all eyes and ears. I mean, they want to please you. They play hard. They practice hard. They're on time for meetings. They do everything right. And those guys energize you as a coach. And then when you bring in veterans, that have been around the game, the professionals, good guys, good team guys, productive on the field. They, you know, they help the rookies. They can also help the coaches. So it's a good blend of veteran guys, young guys, guys that are more athletic, are going to be more productive, and overall should help our defense.
And, Joe, it's got to help when you have a meeting room such as yours where you have so many young guys. To have that veteran guy that they're going to look up to, who you want them to look up to. You know, so I mean, in other words, if you got a bunch of veteran turds, that ain't good.
No.
And you don't, you've got a good room.
Yes, we do. In fact, and one of the first things, even before we started on the draft, was grading free agent players available. And Coach Tucker and I graded about 8 or 10 defensive linemen that Coach Del Rio and Gene Smith, our general manager, wanted us to look at. And at the end of the day, there was one guy that stood out above the rest, and that was Aaron Campman. And, you know, having the privilege to go against him 3 years, I mean, 6 games, he single-handedly killed us every time up in Detroit. But he's just a class act from a work ethic standpoint, from a preparation guy, a guy that does his homework. He's a student of the game, just really seeing how things should be done. And on top of that, he's a great football player.
And obviously comes back from an ACL reconstruction, in which it was fixed last year, Mel, has Mike Ryan, the head athletic trainer, given you any indication of is he going to be on one-a-days? I mean, that's typically how it works, you know, and I don't know how training camp works nowadays as far as what the schedule is going to be exactly, but that's typically what a guy coming back from that injury has.
Yeah, typically what we're going to have to do, we're going to do what he can handle and bring him along. We'll see how he goes those first couple of practices out there, and if we need to back him off, we'll do that. But typically, you know, he'll go, you know, go once a day, and if he can do a little bit more, we'll do that. But we don't want to do anything to set him back. I mean, he's been in the league, you know, he knows what he has to do. He's on schedule, if not ahead of schedule at this point. We just got to be smart about it. And you know, with Aaron, I mean, you got to hold him back. I mean, he's trying to do everything, you know, all the time. And he'll go out there and practice 3 times a day if you let him. So we just have to monitor him. Work with the trainers and with Luke Richardson in the weight room, and Coach Cullen's going to keep an eye on him, and we'll make sure we get him through and get him better and get him ready to go.
I think what impressed me during the OTAs was, you know, when you have new guys come in, sometimes there's that I guess you could say adjustment period where before they can really assume a leadership role, you know, because I mean they are a veteran, but I mean it's a new team for them, so sometimes it takes a while to assimilate that into the person that's new. Kirk Morrison, same way. But from watching the OTAs, it doesn't seem to me that there has been any adjustment period whatsoever, and that these guys basically jumped right in and say, hey, you know, we're willing to lead.
You know, that's a great point. And the way you do that, Jeff, you know, being a leader yourself throughout your playing days, is that, you know, Aaron came in, I'm speaking for him because he's a defensive lineman. He didn't force feed that down anybody's throat. You know, guys went to him early. And he did it by example, and then it just came natural to him because that's what he is. He was a born leader. So,
what are you going to be this year, defensively? I mean, and you know, it's a mystery, and obviously, it's going to stay a mystery going into the season because a lot of people are going to say, "Well, why should they tell anybody what they're going to be?" Last year, you had some 3-4, played 4-3, and seemed to settle in on the 4-3. The draft would indicate 4-3. The indications are obviously from Gene. He said we're going to be a 4-3. Yeah. But what style of 4-3? I think that's what everybody wants to know because, you know, Joe, you've talked about penetrating 4-3 fronts. You know, there's a read and react 4-3 front. What is it going to look like?
Well, obviously, we're going to be a 4-3. That's not a mystery. It is going to be a penetrating, attacking, up the field 4-3 front. And, you know, that's a philosophy that we feel like we can go with and be sound and solid. We're going to rush the passer, and we're going to play the run on the way to the quarterback.
So this is going to be, you know, the Tampa Bay East. And I don't know if you – I mean, obviously there were other teams that did that style of defense before that. But for people's recent memory, when Warren Sapp and those guys were playing over in Tampa, it was up the field and penetrating. Is that – what you're explaining?
Yeah, we're gonna be up the field. We're gonna penetrate. You know, we have a quicker front this year, more athletic, more initial quickness, more speed inside and outside. Coach Cullen has a tremendous background in attacking fronts. He understands how to teach those guys to rush the quarterback and be able to react to the run and stop the run on the way to the quarterback. So it's not a deal where we're not going to concern ourselves with the running game. We'll be solid against the run. There's not an issue with that. But we've got to put pressure on the quarterback. And it starts up front with our defensive line, their get off, their attacking, their reading, reacting, reading their keys. And if it's a run, we'll stop it. If it's not a run, we're to the quarterback.
All right, we've got defensive coordinator Mel Tucker and defensive line coach Joe Cullen here with Jaguars This Week.
Fans, did you know for every pair of club seats you purchased, you can get another one at half price? Well, you can. And this offer is good for our current club seat holders as well. For every 2 club seats you own, you can purchase an additional seat at half price. Just call 633-2000 or visit Jaguars.com for more information. Jaguars This Week returns right after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Fans, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 7 Jacksonville locations, Stein Mart. Once you go, you get it. You want to talk with Coach Tucker and Coach Cullen? Real easy to do. 355-NFL1. That's 355-6351. If you're outside the area, 1-800-355-6351.
So what number do they call if they want to talk to me? What am I, chopped liver?
Probably.
Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate that. All right, continue along the defensive side of the ball. I'm going to remember that. Don't you forget that. Along the defensive side of the ball, you know, one of the things that I think really grabbed my attention in OTAs was the intensity. You know, and you lost a couple practices there at the end. It's no big deal. I mean, it's, you know, OTAs are what they are. But, you know, I think that the message that or the signal that sent me is that this is a young team and it's very competitive because coaches have a very difficult time controlling tempos. I think players are the ones that control tempos. Even if you set a framework, a competitive roster means competitive positions and competitive practices. And that's what I thought impressed me the most about the OTAs.
This is one of the most competitive rosters I've been around in my time in coaching. And the tempo is a result of, just like you said, there's competition at almost every position. And so guys they're working to get a job, basically. And the best guys are going to make the team, and the best guys are going to play. So, and they know that. The tone's been set. If you're not a productive player, then you're not going to be around here very long. And so guys know, hey, this is an opportunity for me to go out here and show these coaches that I can help this team. I can help this team win. And so, you know, we set up the practices to be competitive. The guys have stepped up to it, and a tremendous amount of energy from the coaching staff and the players. And I tell you, Coach Cullen, I'll be the first one to tell you, he brought a tremendous amount of energy to this program. You know, in the meeting room, as soon as you step on that practice field, I mean, you watch the D-line work. Those guys were working 100 miles an hour, and he really set the tone, I think, for what we did out there in OTAs defensively, because we told those guys it all starts up front, and he really took that and ran with it, and I think it's going to pay off for us.
And Joe, when you came in, I love watching the defensive line in practice, but obviously it's not something I can do all the time. But the first time that I did, my first impression was, holy cow, how much does Terrence Knighton weigh? He was huge at the beginning of OTAs. He's down, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Terrence is he's worked extremely hard, and he's lost a lot of weight. He was heavy there, but he'll be where we need him and where he needs to be.
You don't want to share what he was?
Well, he was
big, wasn't he?
He was big. He was big.
He went home to New Jersey and ate some of Mom's cooking. Sticking with you, Joe, on this, some of the rookies. Tell me about a quick, you know, little summary of each rookie that you got, starting with Tyson, and then working your way down through the other draft picks, because the two guys, there are three guys that really stood out to me were the first round pick, De'Anthony Smith, the other defensive tackle who I thought has Warren Sapp type quickness in the OTAs, and obviously it's no pads. But Larry Hart, that little guy, is incredibly strong. And during the OTAs, he was giving Eugene Monroe fits.
Well, you know, one thing, like, and to go back on say what Coach Tucker said, you know, the guys really practiced hard, both sides of the ball. And the good teams that know how to do that and don't get hurt are the ones that carry that over when pads come on. And that's what was happening. Guys were competing. But you start off with Tyson Alualu. He had a great motor. And that's one of the things we look for in a defensive lineman. When we start out evaluating guys, those are things you don't want to train.
I watched a complete college game in which he played against USC, and they were getting beat in the second half, and you would have thought they were winning the way he was playing.
Great energy, great motor, and a great talent. He has the John Randall-type hip flexibility and quickness that you look for, and he's 300 pounds plus. So he's going to be a great player in there for us inside. And as you go down, De'Anthony Smith, I mean, all the qualities that you talked about in Warren Sapp or the quickness that you look for in an under tackle, he has it. He's explosive, really, really fluid in his hips, and he has a knack for rushing the passer. And that's what we need at that position at the under tackle, the three technique position. And then you look at Larry Hart now on tape. You know, other than a couple of the top guys that went, you know, Larry was as good a pass rusher, powerful pass rusher, that I thought there was in the draft. I mean, you know, there's still a warrant out for his arrest in the state in Hawaii because, you know, he single-handedly destroyed that team. He had three sacks or two and a half sacks, but he nearly put the quarterback down about six times.
But when you have a guy, and Mel, you've seen this, when you have a guy who has, I don't want to say limited physical abilities, I'm talking height, weight, which, you know, most people, a lot of scouts, they look at that and, he can't play. But the reality of it is that when you do have short arms and a shorter stature, you have to have something special. Freeney and Mathis have it, whether it be quickness or intensity or just the desire to finish every play. Gene Smith told me a long time ago about Larry Hart, not a long time ago, but recently, that Larry Hart, his thing is strength.
He's exceptionally strong, and that's a great point because, you know, as you go through and you do the research and the background on these guys, one of his sports in high school was powerlifting. You know, being an ex-powerlifter myself, you know, there's judges at those competitions. And he did 650 pounds in high school on the back squat. Now, that's phenomenal strength.
In high school.
Mm. And it showed because in some of the testing here with Luke, there's nobody stronger in the lower body area than Larry. And that equates to power in his rush game.
Okay, and I don't want to go without mentioning Austin, who's going to bring the pain lane.
Well, you know, Austin, disappointing. He was a little injured during OTAs with his hamstring. But, again, there's a guy with he really impressed me in the Senior Bowl. Great energy, great motor. He's powerful. And I'm just looking forward to getting him healthy here in training camp.
I was kind of joking, bring the pain. He had to comment, you know, everybody coming out of college, you know, they feel, you know, feeling like they're young and wild. And I read his comments. And he'll learn a little bit. He'll get a little taste of the NFL pretty soon.
That was one thing. We kind of worked on that when he first got here about, you know, not reading anything in the paper.
Yeah, Coach Cullen broke him down right away. He said, we're not gonna talk about it. We're just going to go out there and do it.
That's a good thing. Doing is better than talking. Mel, the linebacking group, got to be a position of strength going into the season for you. I mean, you've got veteran guys. You've got depth. How do you see it playing out, though? Where's everybody going to fit?
Well, you know, I think it all starts with Daryl Smith. Daryl Smith is a guy who can play multiple positions. You know, he's going to play outside for us, but he has tremendous character. He's a leader in his own way. He's a quiet leader, but he's a very, very productive and consistent player for us. And so you know day in and day out what you're going to get out of Daryl. And he's been there and he's done that, and there's not going to be any drop off there. When we got Kurt in here, and what he brings to the table is he's a veteran guy who's productive, but he has leadership ability. Now, he's a natural leader, and that's what we need in a signal caller to play as an inside backer, a middle backer, stand in front of the huddle, look at those guys eye to eye and say, hey, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to play it, ready, break, and go get it done. And he came in day one, and we told him, hey, we want you to be the leader of our defense, and they're the signal caller. And he took that and said, hey, that's what I do. And he's a smart guy, and he stepped up to do that.
And now, then Justin Durant, this is a guy that I've watched, you know, from his rookie year, tremendous talent, great speed, but needs to pick it up a level. In my mind.
Justin has picked it up. Coach Del Rio really took him under his wing this offseason and sat him down a few times and had some private sessions with him, film study or whatever, and told him, you know, say, hey, you need to pick it up. And he's really responded. I mean, this guy has tremendous ability. He's straight line speed. He's a run and hit guy. But the thing that he's really done, he's become more consistent. He's studying the game in the classroom on his own. And he's showing a level of awareness that he hasn't shown before to this extent, and a feel for the game. And he's reading his keys. His footwork is improved. He's not guessing. It's not just, you know, I think the ball's going here, I'm just going to run over here. No, he's reading his keys, key and diagnose, get to the ball, efficient his movements, all those types of things. And that's really he's maturing as a person. First and foremost, and I think it's carrying over to the football field. So far he's stepped up, and I think that's going to continue. And there's competition, you know, at those positions. So
who is the other competitors at that group?
Well, you look at
Russell Allen.
Take a guy like Russell Allen. He's a guy that came in last year as an undrafted rookie, ended up playing for us and was very productive. His measurables are as good as any of the guys that we have.
He plays with pretty good instincts.
Pretty good instincts. He's physical. He's smart. He can play multiple positions. So he's a guy that can provide depth and compete for a starting job. And so competition at positions, guys know that they have to be at their best coming into training camp, and the best guys are going to make the team. The best guys are going to play. Not only do you have to make the team, but you're going to have to compete to play, get on the field. And so I think those guys understand that. And it's been a healthy competition for us because it's forced guys to step up, do all the little things to give themselves the best chance to make this team and to be on the field. So I feel good about our linebackers. I feel good about the maturity of some of the guys that need to step up. And it's a good mix feel real good, really good going forward with these guys.
All right, defense coordinator Mel Tucker, defensive line coach Joe Cullen, and me, Jeff Loggeman. Quick break, and we'll do another segment with them.
Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and a whole lot more. Stop by Gate today. Jaguars This Week continues right after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Season ticket holders, for every person you refer who purchases season tickets, you'll be entered into our Super Bowl referral sweepstakes. You can win a trip to this year's Super Bowl in Dallas. Just call 633-2000 for more information. Coach Cullen, Coach Tucker, and, of course, the great Jeff Loggeman.
There you go.
I'm back.
Now you're talking. Let it go, Joe. Much better there. And we talked about the defensive line, obviously, and the linebackers. Let's spend a little time in the secondary. Obviously, Rasheen Mathis didn't participate in the OTAs for whatever reason. I don't think there's a big reason to go there. So let's talk about the guys that were there in OTAs and where you expect, and assuming he's here, assuming he's manning that position that he has manned for a long period of time, where do you see the battles elsewhere? Because it appears that you got a good one last year in Derek Cox. Somebody's got to fill the nickel role. Scotty Starks is back. Yep. But you got Cleveland's draft pick that you stole last year, and that was your fault. but you also got some other young guys that seem to be competing pretty well at the cornerback spot.
Yeah, we have competition at all those positions. Really, there's nothing set in stone. I mean, those guys got to come out every day and they got to compete and they got to produce. At the safety position,
that's a big question.
It's a huge question. But I like what I see. Gerald Alexander has really stepped up from a leadership standpoint. He was probably our most consistent safety a year ago, and he's really improved. He spends countless hours in the classroom. He does a great job in the weight room. He goes on the field. He's vocal. He makes the plays he's supposed to make. He's always where he's supposed to be, and I feel really good about where the direction he's headed. You look at everybody wants to know about Reggie Nelson. They ask me, you know, all the time, hey, how's Reggie? Reggie's doing a good job. Probably a week after the season ended, he was in the weight room. He knew he had to get bigger. You know, he's up to about 205 pounds now, which is going to help him. The focus has been on his tackling, his body position, being where he's supposed to be, reading his keys. He's really improved in those areas without the pads. Now we got to see if it translates when we put the pads on. Can he do it in the preseason games and the games consistently? Sean Considine is in there. He's also a guy that's been in the mix. He's played a lot of games, and there's competition there. So, you know, between, you know, those guys, and we got a couple other young guys in the mix, I mean, we're going to find a couple guys that can definitely play consistent football for us. You have to be consistent in the back end. You know,
Reggie's got to earn his time.
Yeah, I mean,
plain and simple.
They all do.
Yeah,
they all have to earn their time, and Reggie's no different. And I think he knows that it's been clearly laid out to him that, you know, what he's got to do to get on the field and stay on the field. So I feel good about the direction we're headed with all those guys and Reggie Nelson included.
How has Derek Cox progressed in year two? Because clearly we saw talent last year.
Yeah, we saw talent. He's done a nice job. I thought he heated up pretty good in the last part of the OTAs and really started to step up and make some plays. And he's going in the right direction. And we all told him, hey, you did a good job as a rookie. You made some plays. You had four or five picks. Showed up and looked like you belonged out there. But that's not going to be good enough this season. You have to improve. If you play the same way this season as you played a year ago, we're not going to be nearly good enough at that spot. And he understands that. And I think he stepped up, and he's going to be solid for us.
How about Scotty Starks?
I love Scotty.
Been a dependable guy, smart guy, comes to work every day. Is he healthy?
He seems healthy. He didn't miss a practice. He was out there. He took all of his reps. He played the corner spot. He held down the nickel spot for us. Did a real nice job. And I think a year ago he was not fully recovered. He didn't have confidence in what he could do, and ultimately he ended up hurt most of the time. But right now he has confidence. He's playing fast. He's instinctive. He's one of the smarter players that we have out there. And he's a guy that if he's healthy, he can be a tremendous boost for us.
Joe, with the defensive line, most people are going to say, well, who's going to start? You know, and I get the impression, because I know the line that you played in Detroit, I mean, there were four starters, but there were seven and sometimes eight guys that played. Is that what you envision this year, is having seven and eight guys active and on game day, they're all playing?
Right. You know, that's a that's a philosophy I've always had, that if you are active, you're going to play, and you're good enough to play a significant role. So there'll be a starting four that will shake out by the end of camp, but then the seven or eight that are active, they'll be in there rotating. That's what I've always felt.
Do you have anybody that you envision as being an inside pass rusher? I mean, you have Tyson, you have De'Anthony Smith. Obviously, Pot Roast is a guy that can get some push. Last year, Reggie Hayward, who's now gone, was able to swing inside. Do you see any of the ends having that ability to go inside?
Well, we worked a little bit in the OTAs, and I think Harvey has the ability to do that, as well as Jeremy Mincy has the ability to do that.
Derek Harvey, big year for him.
Big year for him is exactly right.
Big year for him. And I've always, me and Reggie Hayward had this conversation, and we're about out of time, but I had this conversation that, you know, I remember my first year, you know, four sacks, second year, four sacks, year 3-10. Year three is a big year for a defensive lineman. It appears that he has worked very hard, dropped some weight. I've seen him run around faster than any OTAs in previous years. Were you happy with his, you know, his effort and production in the OTAs?
Was really, really happy with the way he worked, the way he prepared. First thing we talked about when we sat down is he was about 280 pounds, and that you could really gain a step, which would help you a lot more than 10 to 15 pounds. So he really worked on dropping his weight and body fat. And our strength coach, Luke Richardson, did a great job with him. He's hovering around 65 right now, which is perfect for where we want Derek. And he progressed well in the OTAs, and really excited to, you know, his game to me has always been power, you know, with inside moves and things of that nature. So I'm really excited to get working with him in camp, and really, really pleased with Derek.
So Monday back to work. Players report 29th. What day is that? Next week.
That's next
Thursday.
Next Thursday, and then we start the day after that.
And so this will be the last week that you guys can actually remember what day of the week it is for about a month.
Yeah, we'll be getting after it.
Well, best of luck in training camp. You guys make sure you spend lots of time with family, because pretty soon that's going to be out the window.
We'll do that. We're going to spend these last couple days.
All right, folks. Next week, what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to get Dirk Cutter, the offensive coordinator, and then also a position coach, and we can kind of do a little offensive preview to training camp. And once again, we'll have the vice president and CFO, Bill Prescott, to talk about some ticketing things and hopefully get a gauge on where the meter's moving on that. And, guys, thank you very much for coming in today.
Hey, thanks for having us,
Thanks
Jeff.
For having us, Jeff.
Enjoy that last, 4 days off. We'll talk to everybody next week.
All right, take care, brother.